Hello, once again, welcome to the Podcast World Forum here in the Philippines. This is Joshua Matipo, your Filipino contributor, and we will discuss about the Kidapawan massacre, which resulted into 3 casualties from the side of the protesters, and another record of human rights violation against the Aquino administration. And also, we will cover up some international news here, like the Panama Papers, and it also affects the politicians here in the Philippines, since some of them have offshore accounts. Well, as I commented on one of my posts, I think the politics, both here in the Philippines, in the United States, and in the other parts of the world, are very connected. And one thing that binds them together is corruption, bank accounts, and offshore accounts. Okay. So, before we tackle about the Kidapawan massacre, let's review, or let's go back to Philippine history, whereby we tackle the agrarian problems since the turn of the 20th century. Okay, so let's begin with the Spanish times. So most of the agricultural lands were owned by the friars, the prailes. They were the landowners, the landlords during that time, and there's no Filipino who owns that land. But as the transition between the 3 administration, from the Spanish administration, colonial administration, to the first Philippine Republic, and up to the American colonial administration. Okay, so as the friars, the prailes, were being cast out of their agricultural lands. So by 1898, after achieving the Philippine independence from Spain, the first Philippine Republic, particularly the Philippine Congress, enacted a agricultural reform. But however, it was not implemented due to the Filipino-American War that was lasted for 2 years until 1901, when President Emilio Aguinaldo and his cabinet surrendered to the Americans, and another colonial master is on the helm of the Philippine way of life. Okay, the Americans. So under the Governor General Taft, he distributed the land, which was formerly owned by the friars, with the permission of the Vatican, and being given to some of the richest Filipinos. So those richest Filipinos become the hacienderos, the landlords, and the peasants remain chiefs, or meaning they're being tied up to their land, having no land to own with. So they are tied up to the land, and they're serving their landlords, the Panginoong May Lupa, which we call here in Filipino. So during the American colonial period, there were agrarian uprisings, particularly the Sakdal uprisings in the Tagalog region in 1935, but it was brutally suppressed by the newly installed Commonwealth of the Philippines under President Manuel L. Quezon. And after that, the start of the agricultural or agrarian reform was beginning to unravel. Okay, so the vision of President Quezon, the president of the Commonwealth at that time, was equity for the farmers. So he dreamed that the farmers will have their own lands and not to be tied up by their their hacienderos or their landlords. So it was slowly implemented throughout the years, but it was being halted temporarily during the Japanese occupation in World War II. And finally, after 48 years of American administration, the Philippine independence was finally recognized in 1946. But even though the Philippines became independent in 1946, agrarian unrest and agrarian problems continued to plague the country, especially the Hook Rebellion, which was led by Luis Tarok and his communist army, his communist armed group called the Hooks or the Hukbong Bayan, nagpalaya sa bayan. They were the left-leaning guerrilla groups during the World War II who became an insurgent group that plagued during the administration of President Rojas, President Quirino, and up to the time of President Magsaysay. So finally, the Hook Rebellion was being stopped by President Ramon Magsaysay in 1955 with the surrender of Luis Tarok and his Hook army. Okay, so even though the Hook Rebellion stopped, there were still unrest in the agrarian sector, particularly in Central Luzon, where we call the Hacienda Luisita, which was owned by a certain landlord family named the Cuanco family, which owned hectares of land surpassing almost four towns in the province of Tarlac, and they were not able to implement the plans of President Magsaysay to distribute those lands to the farmers after the 10-year period as being agreed upon between the government of President Magsaysay and the Cuanco family. So the 50s came to the 60s, and when Ferdinand Marcos won the 1965 elections, agricultural problems and agrarian reforms are also continued. But however, the communist insurgency with the rise of the New People's Army under Jomo Sison had also plagued the agricultural reform. So the 70s, which were the time of the martial law, the 80s, the agrarian reform or the agrarian problems continued to plague upon the economic condition of the Philippines. So after Marcos was deposed by the People Power Revolution in 1986, February 25, 1986, and ironically, his successor, the widow of the late Benigno Aquino Jr., became president, President Corazon Cuanco Aquino. And President Aquino was a member of the Cuanco clan, one of the biggest owning landlords here in the Philippines. So let me tackle about the Aquino's record on addressing the agrarian reform. Okay, so starting from 1987 up to the end of her term in 1992, a department was created, the Department of Agrarian Reform, which aims to distribute lands to the farmers, to the landless farmers who were getting tired of working under a landlord. But however, it's very hypocritical, but that the first Aquino administration under President Cory Aquino did not distribute, made the Hacienda of Lucita in Tarlac being under the agrarian reform program and gave the farmers the stock options instead of fully implementing the agrarian reform law, which was being implemented all over the Philippines. So, in January 1987, the farmers from Central Luzon marched in front of the Menjola Bridge near the Malacañang Palace to pressure the president at that time, President Aquino, to implement the agrarian reform even to their families' lands in Tarlac. But they were met with violence from the police, which was resulted to many casualties on the side of the farmers protesting at that time, which was later known as the Menjola Massacre. So it was one of the thorns that haunted the remainder years of the Aquino administration during the time of Tita Cory or President Cory Aquino. Okay, so then after her term, President Ramos, President Estrada, and President Macapagal Arroyo continued to implement the Comprehensive Agrarian Reform Program, which was passed during the Aquino administration. But still, Hacienda Lucita, it seems, is untouchable. And there's another issue which resulted into violence and casualties of a few farmers. This time in the land itself, in Hacienda Lucita, in Tarlac. On the year 2005, the farmers protested in front of the Hacienda Lucita office. They protested that they wanted that the Hacienda Lucita should be under the Comprehensive Agrarian Reform Program, or the CARP. But however, they were also met with violence. And it's very ironic that the man who shot the farmers was the security detail of the later on President Benigno Aquino III. So this is the ghost that continues to haunt President Noynoy Aquino up to this day. So aside from the Menjola Massacre, the Hacienda Lucita Massacre, here comes the Kidapawan Massacre. And we will discuss about the Kidapawan Massacre now. Okay, so the situation in Mindanao, particularly in northern Cotabato, is that from January this year, January 2016, El Nino, the El Nino phenomenon, or a famine, which is one of the results of climate change, had plagued the farmlands of the Cotabato provinces, so including the city of Kidapawan. So for almost 3 months, the farmers went hungry together with their families. They cannot produce their own rice, their own food, and they keep repeating, asking for help from the national government and from the provincial government. But however, it was felt into deaf ears until such time that out of desperation, the farmers blocked the main highway in the province of Northern Cotabato going to Kidapawan and protesting and pleading for the government for them to give them food and emergency assistance during those times of those times of famine, since the land is barren, they cannot produce rice, and they went hungry instead of producing their own food like they usually do. So they're asking for, they're pleading for help from the national government, from the Aquino government, but unfortunately it was it was fell into deaf ears. So the climax of this event, which led to the confrontation between the farmers and the Philippine National Police being deployed by the administration to disperse the protesters. So the breakdown of those negotiations led to the violent upheaval between the two sides, which resulted into deaths of farmers and injuries on the side of the police, because the farmers are throwing Molotov cocktails and rocks against the riot police. So it now becomes a major issue here in the Philippines, especially in the upcoming Philippine presidential elections. So in response to the plea of the farmers, other cities and provinces of Mindanao had offered help to the province of North Cotabato, and this gets complicated. Okay, the city of Davao had approved a resolution offering rice, sacks of rice, to the farmers in Northern Cotabato. But it was denied by the governor there, Governor Lala Mendoza. It was denied by Governor Mendoza, and because she thought it's very insulting for her to accept those sacks of rice from other provinces. Particularly, she also thinks that the Davao Mayor Rodrigo Duterte is using this event to politicize and to show to the Philippines that he is a great provider, he's ready to help, especially those who were in need. But Duterte has a record of helping other local government units in the time of disaster, particularly in Yolanda. So I don't know if he and the Davao government is sincere in helping the farmers in Northern Cotabato, or since this is election time, he wants to capitalize the event to boost votes for him. I don't know. But I see the two positive and negative sides of Duterte offering help to the province of North Cotabato. So it's not just Davao, but also the provinces of Cagayan de Oro, the provinces of Misamis, Surigao, Zamboanga, and even from the provinces here in Luzon, from Central Luzon, they're offering help. Okay, and at the same time, there were conspiracy theories being popped up during this event, especially it includes both the Moro National Liberation Front, the New People's Army, and their leftist allies who were always critical of every administration that leads the Philippines for every 6 years, from Cory Aquino's term to Fidel Ramos' term to Joseph Estrada's term to Gloria Macapagal Arroyo's term, and now to Benigno Aquino III's term. They keep on protesting because their ideal government was to establish a communist dictatorship in the Philippines. And because the Cold War is over, the struggle for the international is over, they resolved to rallies, to they resolved their ideology through rallies, influencing the farmers, influencing young students from the city about the communist ideology. Okay, so it's very scary, but you see, if the government provides the needs of the farmers immediately, as soon as they receive help or they receive the plea from the farmers in Cotabato, there's no way that the communists or the leftists will influence the situation in Mindanao, the famine in Mindanao. Instead of politicizing the event, the government should address the needs of the people first, instead of thinking that this is politics, this is here and that. So it's very sad. That the issue gets complicated between the government and the leftists, using this event to capitalize their gains, and also for the presidential candidates, particularly Duterte and Senator Po. And as for Senator Po, the ex-American running for president, she wanted this matter to be investigated in the Senate, but I do not hear other comments from the Vice President Binay and Senator Miriam Defensor Santiago, but they condemn the impunity that committed by the Philippine National Police against the farmers. So this event, the Kidapawan massacre, gives the leftist groups and the Communist Party of the Philippines a justification to condemn the government, and they will say, well, the government cannot provide you with your needs, so you should come and join us. So it's very sad that instead of living a peaceful life, providing food security for our farmers, they're becoming pawns between the two opposing sides in this chessboard of Philippine politics. Okay, so I would like to ask our listeners here at the podcast to at least go to your nearest government and non-government organizations that offers help to the people of Kidapawan, Northern Cotabato, and donate sack of rice, food for them, as they are continuing starving there in Kidapawan, and they needed the, all the help that they can get there. So we are appealing to our listeners to help our countrymen in Kidapawan. So let's show to the world the spirit of Bayanihan in these critical times, that we should help each other out. We should help our fellow countrymen in the time of their need. Okay, so thank you. So let's go on with its impact to in the Philippine presidential election. So, well, it seems that the most affected here in the Kidapawan massacre is the administration candidate Marrojas. Why? Because for recent weeks he was being criticized for being too epal. When you say epal here in the Philippines, it means you want to be the center of attraction. You want to be in the picture always. You want to grab credit for yourself even though you didn't do that. There's someone who did that and it does not belong to you. So that's one of the criticisms of the administration candidate, the former Interior Secretary Marrojas. So it's very sad that it seems it's hopeless for him to win this election because of the issues being thrown against him, especially his failure to address the problem during the 2013 event of Yolanda being hit at Leyte and Samar, which resulted to 6,000 casualties in those two provinces. And the slow pace of the recovery of Yolanda. So it's very, very sad. It's very sad moment for Manuel Rojas II, the grandson of the late President Manuel Rojas. So I think he needs to give up the race because it's very hopeless for him to win. In every corner, they want to curse the name of Marrojas. Ah, si Marrojas, he's an idiot. He's a trapo, a traditional politician. Although, I believe he's a technocrat by nature, but unfortunately, he cannot able to have a popular appeal, especially to the lower classes, the masa, which is the lower classes here in the Philippines, okay, which is the most number of voters came from the masa, okay. So Kidapawan race, or I mean the Kidapawan massacre, will haunt the remaining weeks of the Aquino administration as it comes to a close, because the president himself failed to address the problem of food security in Mindanao, and it will haunt him after he steps down out of office come June 30, 2016. So, it's very important for him to at least address those problems immediately. But however, it is too little too late to address, as the issue regarding the food security here, not only in Kidapawan and in Mindanao, but in the Philippines, is not being addressed upon by the national government. Okay, so let's go to the another issue, the Panama Papers. The Panama Papers was being released by a unknown source and being given to a law firm company in Germany, and it was being exposed to the media. So it has a very, very huge, very, very huge date of information regarding politicians, world leaders, criminals, terrorists, and their offshore bank accounts. So, okay. So, I see that all the corrupt politicians were in the same boat, which is the Panama Papers. Okay, from the United States, it's being used against Hillary Clinton. Here in the Philippines, it was being used against against Senator JV Ejercito, Ilocos Norte Governor Aimee Marcos, and other politicians who had offshore bank accounts in the Republic of Panama in Central America. So, why those politicians do that? Because they want to evade big taxes here in the Philippines. Just like in the United States, many of their politicians were having a option, and owners of big companies were having offshore bank accounts. Why? Because they want to avoid the tax man in their respective countries. And mind you, some of, or many of those of those wealth that they had on their offshore bank accounts came from government funds. So, well, I don't know what will happen, but what will happen to the world at large as world leaders such as the father of the Prime Minister of Great Britain, David Cameron, is involved. Russian President Vladimir Putin is involved. So on and so forth. They are all involved in this biggest scandal of the century, let me say. This is the biggest expose being exposed. Even being exposed about how the global monetary system goes, sometimes under the black markets, sometimes out of corruption from their different countries. And okay, and lastly also, I would like to respond to Sally and Tech, who is comparing the Philippine presidential election to the US presidential election. Well, you're both right. So you have five crazy dudes running for president over there, and we have five crazy dudes running over here. Like, for example, not just only Duterte, the vigilante, but a progressive mayor. So he's both the Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders at the same time here in the I would like to compare him both to Trump and Sanders, because he has a progressive record in Davao, especially on catering juvenile justice system and in addressing discrimination against women, members of LGBT, and the like. Okay, so he has an excellent record regarding tackling social issues, but however, I disapprove of his unorthodox method on fighting crime, like for example, using the Davao Death Squad to kill criminals in his particular city. So that's one of the critic I say to Rodrigo Duterte. And as for Grace Po, I have observed her that she's very full of ideas. She studied the issues about the Philippines very well. Well, I would like to commend her for that. But unfortunately, during the last debate, it was being shown her inexperience, especially in the implementation of policies and programs of the national government. Okay, so here, Vice President Binay. So, Vice President Binay. So, he has a great track record to be an excellent mayor of Makati for almost 30 years. He was able to enrich Makati from a backward town here in Metro Manila into one of the leading cities in the Philippines. Well, I also see his being a man of action. But however, he cannot defend himself against the allegations of corruption, which was being thrown against him, especially during his tenure in Makati City as mayor. He has issues of overpriced projects, and which is not being addressed very clearly by the vice president. Overpriced buildings, which he implemented it, especially the over a billion peso overpriced 11th floor parking lot, okay, which is overpriced for over a billion pesos. Okay, so that's the biggest issue that haunts the vice president, and it's being thrown against him by the other candidates, especially on the second debates last time in Cebu City. Okay, then there comes Mar Rojas, the administration candidate. Well, he's a very experienced person when it comes to to passing laws. He has a great experience as a legislator. He was known as the father of the BPO. When you say BPO, it's the call centers. So it was his brainchild on why the call center companies here in the Philippines were being established here in the different parts of the Philippines. Okay, and expanded Senior Citizens Act of 2008. He's the author or one of the co-authors of that law. However, being attached with President Aquino and the problem of incompetency of his cabinet members, that includes Rojas. So he's the butt of jokes by the social media, by internet memes, being called as Mr. Palenque, being called as Boy Bawang, being called as a elite who doesn't know the day-to-day problems of a ordinary Filipino, because he was born rich, just like Mitt Romney, and also a little bit of Trump. So I guess both Rodrigo Duterte and Mar Rojas, their gestures, I can compare them to Trump. And Grace Po, I can compare Grace Po to Hillary Clinton, because both of them had allegations of lying their records. Okay, particularly Grace Poe on the issue of lying her life in the U.S. and the status of her husband, Nila Llamares. Also, Clinton has a record of lying, especially on the issues of Benghazi, on the issues of private emails and stuff. So I can compare Grace Poe to Hillary Clinton, okay? And Jejo Marbinay, I may compare him, let's say, to none of them, because the vice president didn't answer the allegations being thrown against him, especially on the issue of overpriced buildings, of overpriced projects being implemented in Makati. And finally, the Iron Lady of Asia, Miriam Defensor Santiago. Well, this is her third time to run as president of the Philippines, but however, she didn't win on the previous two elections, and sayang si Miriam, sayang. When you say sayang, it's very pitiful for Miriam, because although she can offer more for the country using her intellect, her experience in both the executive, he was one of the cabinet secretaries of President Corazon Aquino. He served as a judge. He served as a senator for almost 20 years. So he had a solid record. But however, she was diagnosed with cancer, and she is struggling to keep up, to keep in the race. So I pray for her recovery. I pray for the recovery of the Iron Lady. And the issue of health is being used against her. So how can she be able to lead the country if she is very sick? So it's very sad. It's very sad for those who want to vote for her. Okay. So those were the five candidates in the Philippine presidential elections. And as, let's say, a month before the Philippine elections, we would like to encourage all of you to post your comments, to post your suggestions, to post your memes, your information about your favorite candidates you want to vote here at the Podcast World Forum. So I'll continue posting more information regarding the updates of the Philippine presidential elections, and also on April 10, Sunday, I would encourage you all to watch the vice presidential debate, which will be held at at University of Santo Tomas in Manila. So I will try to personally go there to report on what will happen to the vice presidential elections there, the debates. We have six candidates in the vice presidential elections. Let's begin with Senator Bongbong Marcos, the son of the late President Ferdinand Marcos, Senator Antonio Trillanes, the neophyte Congresswoman Leni Robredo of the Liberal Party, the administration party, Gringo Honasan, the running mate of the Vice President, Jejo Marbinay, Alan Peter Cayetano, Senator Alan Peter Cayetano, the running mate of Rodrigo Duterte, and Chis Escudero, Senator Chis Escudero, Cheese Escudero is the running mate of Senator po. By the way, Senator Bongbong Marcos is the running mate of Senator Miriam Defensor Santiago for the vice presidency. Okay, so stay tuned. Let's look if I can able to go to UST this coming Sunday and report to you live from UST the updates regarding the vice presidential election. So see you then. So thank you for listening and keep up, keep on commenting, keep on posting your the information of your presidential balls here at podcast World Forum. So once again, this is Joshua Matipo and mabuhay ang Pilipinas, mabuhay tayong lahat.